This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 547, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
Cold Heart!
iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 547. I am Josh Flanagan. I'm here with Ron Richards.
Hello, Josh. It's good to be back.
Connor is, I believe, an international traveler.
Or he's on the run. One of two. I mean, he is out of the country. We don't know why. I mean, it could be under the guise of a quote unquote vacation or shit went down.
I like that he's continually on the run and then everything's okay and then it happens again. And these things don't stack up. It's a testament to him. So we are iFanboy. We like comic books. That's why we're here. Every week we read what seems to be a bigger stack of comics every week.
Yeah, that's for sure.
And you wait for a week where there's less comics and it doesn't happen. And if there is one, that next wave week is going to be a tidal wave.
Yeah,
that's what I've learned. Anyway, so we read them all. We pick one that's our favorite. We call that the pick of the week. We lead the show with that, if you've listened before. Then we're going to talk about other books from the week and some stuff and talk about some things. It's
a good time, man. I'm excited. I missed last week because I was off pinballing. But I'm excited to participate in the patrons pick later on the show. So stay tuned for that. That was my first patrons pick. I heard last week went like gangbusters.
It was a comic book.
Yeah.
We are going to talk about what happens in those books. So that's your spoiler warning. If you haven't read them, that's your own problem, dude. Ron, you had the pick.
I did have the pick. And like you, the aforementioned Stacko Books was mighty this week. There was a lot of really quality books. And honestly, when I was sitting down, I mean, and normally, like, I'm pretty quick with the pick of the week, right, Josh? I mean, you've I'll read my books and I'm like, yep, that's my one. That's my horse. That's what I'm going with. But this week I took my time. I thought about it a lot. I reread some stuff and it was really a matter of inches on a couple of books. But ultimately, at the end of the day, I fucking love Midnight of the Soul. And Midnight of the Soul number three, with story and written and drawn by the mighty Howard Chaykin. And there's an old term that I believe we coined back in the day, good Chaykin. What I love seeing that term has spread like wildfire through the comics industry. I've heard other people who don't know us use it, which I like. And Midnight of the Soul is just about as good a Chaykin as you're going to get these days. Because if there was a book that this man was ever made to do, it seems like it's this. And the thing about it is that we talked about the first issue. I don't know. Did we talk about the second issue, or did I miss the show on the second issue?
No, I don't think we did. Yeah. I think we just talked about the first.
So to set the stage, it takes place in the late 40s, early 50s, New York.
Post-World War II.
There's a World War II vet who clearly has got PTSD, and he's been holed up in his house out on Long Island. He can't leave the house for years. And then he catches wind of the fact that his wife is she's going to the city, and she's making time on him. Some shenanigans are going on.
She's whoring.
She's whoring.
Literally. I'm not. It's not a judgment.
Nope.
Literally whoring.
And so he decides to don his leather jacket, get on his motorcycle that he previously would just ride in a circle in the front yard, and head to the big city. And issue 3 picks up where he's standing on his motorcycle in Times Square, and he's on the case. He's trying to find his wife, and he's seemingly a step behind her at every turn. And this issue is just a tour de force, almost a time machine back to New York City of 1948, 1949, 1950. This is the New York City that I read about in Jack Kerouac novels and Allen Ginsberg poems. This is the New York City that that no longer exists. That I wish more than anything I could have been there for. This is the New York City that my grandfather was working in, was there in the mix. And this is as gritty and noir-y and just real as it gets. This is raw comics.
I don't know about real. It's heightened.
But by real in that. So this is the one thing that I wanted to celebrate and kind of what I thoroughly love is that Chaykin. First off, Howard Chaykin is not a man of this now. He's a man of this time. Like he's a man's man. And
I find that we gravitate towards comic creators of that ilk.
We really do, which is weird.
Every time we would talk about Darwin, I would say that's a man who lives in 1962 and he doesn't care what it really is.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's like almost the same kind of deal.
Yeah. So what I think is spectacular, and I know that Howard Chaykin has an affinity for this time period because we've seen his work with Matt Fraction on Satellite Sam, which also takes place during this time. He also he's a born and bred New Yorker, loves Broadway, like all this sort of stuff. And to see the level of detail and design that went into the characters in the classic Chaykin kind of facial style, but the backgrounds are just like, it is like walking into a photograph. Right. And like and I'm sure there's a lot of photo reference. I'm sure he found like a shot of New York City and that he's, you know, playing with it. But like the glow of the neon, the detail of the awning in front of the Sheridan Astor Hotel in Times Square, the chock full of nuts sign above the coffee shop. Right. Like these are New York mainstays that are gone. That are just that this is what New York used to look like, and now they're just it's I haven't seen that Chock Full of Nuts logo in years, although I'm pretty sure they're still around. But still,
I was like, oh, that.
Yeah, right. That. Right. Yeah. And like in the opening on the first page where he's on he's in Times Square and there's he's right by the Mayfair Theater and there's the big wraparound billboard for Martin Lewis and Sailor Beware, right? Like that. Like I just got lost in this book for the 20 minutes that I read it. Like it was just a blast. And there's some action. There's the classic. You know, he's a step behind. You know, he's going from coffee shop to diner. He's finding somebody. Then there's another group of people who are looking for his wife as well too. And you know, and then you get a wacky PTSD flashback to the war. And the last page makes me wonder if he's in a parallel universe or not, which I like. Which I was like, oh, that was an interesting choice.
Yeah, it's good.
So I don't know. I just love this book. I love the series. I love that it is out there. I think that for those of you who aren't aware of the greatness of Howard Chaykin, going back to American Flag or whatnot, like even that last page of the issue where you know the main character's back is to the camera, he's on the motorcycle and on the street. And it says end part 3, and their cars come at him and the lights. Like it is this is just really spectacular.
You got to give – I want to make sure I give credit. The colorist, Jesus Obertov, I guess. He, you know, Chaykin did everything except for the letters and the colors.
Yeah.
But a lot of that stuff that you're talking about, those glowing signs and
The headlights, right?
Yeah.
Like light in comics is a funny thing. You know, because it's, and of course Photoshop has helped, and you know, it's gotten easier as the, you know, technology has grown, but the ability to manipulate true glowing light on a flat,
isn't that neat?
Yeah, on a flat piece of paper is not easy, and to be able to nail the almost the plus sign artifacting of a headlight, you know, yeah, where the light is going up and down, and like, and the glow of a deli sign in the background, or the glow of like a doorway. Like, there's one point in the World War II flashback where there's an alley and there's a door with bars and there's explosions going off behind it, but there's the glowing coming in the distance, but in the foreground it's not, you know, like, it's really well, the colors are really, really well done. So
yeah, I like the light. It's, that is one of those things in modern comic book coloring that always fascinates me, is the optical illusion of the glowing light.
Yeah.
And I, every time I see it, I look at it, I'm like, that's neat. Yeah. That's neat that they did that. And if that's the best thing to come out of Photoshop, then that's fine.
Yeah.
Well, you know, my question to you was going to be, what was it about this issue that was so special compared to the others? Because when I read it, I was like, well, maybe there's going to be something. But it pretty much felt like the other two issues, which is not a bad thing. But you kind of explained it, is my point. Like,
Yes, I
was like, okay, I understand exactly.
Yeah, it wasn't. And the thing was, this isn't a first issue. This isn't a you know, a oh my god, huge revelation moment, or this insane kind of thing. It's just the, from page one to the last page, I was enthralled and enraptured by it. And to me, that's deserving.
Yeah, I think this is one of those things, like, if you like it, you're going to like it. If you don't like it, you're not. And there's not anything anybody can do. We wouldn't convince you, like, oh, I don't really like that.
Yeah.
That's fine. Don't
read
it. That's
fine. Yeah, exactly.
You know, don't. But for you, you know, it's like, this is exactly what you like. And then so by the time you've got to the third issue and you're still getting that, and there wasn't a reveal of a demon, for example.
Well, yeah. Oh, God. Because, and that's a great segue, because I'll tell you, a strong close second was the new – well, we got to do the ratings first anyway. But, yeah, we'll get to that. Okay, there's a teaser for that.
Just getting the thing you want, and then at the end you're like, that was what I want, and I'm very satisfied.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So Midnight of the Soul number 3, published by Image Comics, by Howard Chaykin. I you said it best. Like, if you like this, you know what I'm talking about. If you don't like it, I don't know what to tell you, and I'm not going to try to convince you. It's just, it's a very...
If you've never read it, you should check it out, because you might like it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you like retro-y kind of things, if you like I mentioned, the, you know, kind of Kerouac and the Beats and things like that, you know, even if you're into Mad Men, check it out, because it's got that retro feel, and it's that, you know, kind of unfolding mystery and that sort of thing. Just the way the main character rolls his jeans, the cuffs, like, I'm like, oh, God, I wish I lived back then.
Well, it's also kind of like... It's a little more raw than those things too. I think
thing
you're talking about old New York is that, like,
it's also on the waterfront.
Yeah, but it's like dealing with like crime characters and like, it has a different take on what we would have thought of as like traditional criminals or like gay people or whatever, how they would have thought at that time. It's much more, it's like sort of gritty, like when you're in the, he says something in there like, New York's a small town, and that's what people don't get. And I was like, that's it. He's got that.
Yep, exactly. And he's totally right. He is totally right. Because it is a tiny town.
And then it was much smaller.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, I get that. I get that all makes sense. Yep. So right. let's move along.
Let's move along.
Comic book that I had to read.
Yes, the ratings of the DC Rebirth books continue on, and this is, I honestly did not think in August we'd still be doing this, but here we are.
I'm surprised every week, because it shows on the list, and I go, oh God, there was another one of these.
Yeah, ratings. So Suicide Squad Rebirth number 1, similarly timed with the release of the Suicide Squad movie. Look at DC aligning their schedules. Look at that.
Seems so simple, yet.
Yeah.
That Force Awakens comic book just came out.
Right, true, good point. So this is Suicide Squad Rebirth number 1, written by Rob Williams, with art by Philip Tan, and a parade of inkers, Jonathan Glapion, Scott Hanna, and Sandu Florea, and Alex Sinclair on covers. Josh, you're a big Suicide Squad fan. What did you think?
There's a misnomer in that sentence. I'm not a Suicide Squad fan. I'm aware that there is a beloved run from Ostrander, I believe.
Yes.
In the 80s, and I never read it, and I don't feel one way or the other about it. I thought Philip Tan was. I haven't heard from him in a while.
Yep.
this wasn't for him. I thought this is actually, if there was such good things, good Phil Tan art, I was like, all right, that's not bad. That's passable.
I expected worse. I expected worse on the art, but I gotta tell you, I can't think of anything that I hate more than Deadshot's costume.
I had that thought.
Yeah, like wow. I was like, I had to look at the calendar. I'm like, is this 1996, 97?
Not only that, I was like, I can't remember what Deadshot looks like, but I think it was a good. I think it was like I liked the costume, but this one was so. It took over my eyes so much that I literally could not picture it.
Yeah.
I couldn't remember what it used to look like. Written by Rob Williams, who actually does great work. Rob Williams is a great writer. He is doing Unfollow now, which is a book we like very much. Yep. So I was like, all right. It felt to me like an introduction to these characters and a workaday job.
Yeah.
That we've got to do this comic book because there's a movie.
Yep.
And it was done as well as you could do that, given the constraints of...
And let's give each character their moment so you understand who they are and what they do. And it was very much, I think, like, if people went from the movie theater right to the comic book store, like we know they do, and they see Suicide Squad on the shelf, this would be a good introduction to the comic, and which is what that's the job of this book. I could have done without the opening scene with Amanda Waller and President Obama.
Obama?
I mean, it's supposed to be Obama, which is good that they have that in, but I just
let his hair grow out natural, like.
Well, my problem with that whole sequence was that he's yelling at – he finds out about Amanda Waller – he finds out about the Suicide Squad, is yelling at Amanda Waller and saying that, you know, I swore an oath to defend this country. We do not do this, not here. And it's like, this isn't going to happen. And then she's like, okay, yeah, but what about this guy? And he's like, okay, yeah, sure.
Yep.
It was just like, so why have this scene? Like, why have the president give her a dressing down if he's just going to tacitly approve what they're doing again? You know, like, I don't know.
Yeah, you're right. I think the point of that scene is to be like, look how high up this goes. And they are the good guys because they're working for the, although even that is subjective in our current culture.
Yeah.
Like, oh, she's working for the president, she must be evil. Or, oh, he said that, I guess it's okay. You know, like it.
Yeah.
Which is not bad. It's an interesting thing.
Yeah.
Friend of mine, did you? I know that there's going to be a show on Suicide Squad. Have you seen it yet?
I haven't. So ironically, I attempted to see it yesterday. In the target demographic area of Queens. And every showing I went, I tried to get into the 5 o'clock showing on Friday afternoon, and every showing, multiple screens was sold out until 9 o'clock.
Huh.
So, and I was just like, God, target demo. There it is. Yeah. Like, I was like, I'm here. These are the people who are going to make this movie $150 million this weekend.
Well, a friend of mine, who I decided to make my proxy review, like I read what he said needed to be fixed about it, whatever. And one of the things I think stood out is that I don't know why Harley Quinn is in this.
Yeah.
I mean, I do know why.
Right.
But I don't know why.
Well, yeah, but I think that was what we brought up when they originally put her in the Suicide Squad back in the New 52. It was just like, okay, you know, so yeah.
Well, it even felt in this, like if this is all that I'd ever read, it was like, what? Why is she there? It doesn't.
Yeah.
I know why she's there. But I feel like where they used to have a really fun time with Catwoman and sort of like having her ride the line of good guy, bad guy.
Yep.
The Harley Quinn, I can't figure out what that is. And maybe that's because she's supposed to be crazy. But
she's got really short shorts.
Not in this, though.
Not in this, though. Yeah, sure.
She's
clothed
in this quite conservatively, relatively speaking.
Yeah.
Also, she's not in a scaly armor.
Oh, jeez. Oh, God. All right. So ratings. Josh, give it a rating.
2.5.
2.5. I'm going to give it a 3.
It wasn't bad.
It wasn't bad. It was passable. And like we said, the Phil Tan art wasn't awful. Like I expect, I braced myself for much worse.
Yeah.
It's not for me. So that said, I'm not going to stick with it. Josh, will you be continuing? You're a big Suicide Squad fan. Will you be continuing with it?
Not a big Suicide Squad. It's okay. Reverse that again.
It's okay. No, you don't have to. You can be honest here.
I'm not going to be continuing with it. No.
All right. There you go. So but ratings.
I've read worse comic books.
Yeah, me too. Exactly. I read worse comic books this week, in fact.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Lots of books with Civil War on the cover. Anyway. All right, so up next is the book that nearly was pick of the week, A Matter of Inches, the new book from Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips, Killer Be Killed, number one. I was reading this book, and I'm like, I'm digging this, I'm liking this, I'm oh, there's a demon.
Not you too, Ed Brubaker!
Ed too, bro! Why, like, if they, like, oh.
The guy I count on!
Why is there a demon?
I thought about this, and, okay.
Basic I mean, premise. Well, hang on. Like, first okay. off, I love the cover, the look. I mean, Sean, the great, clean Sean Phillips design, right? I love the logo. I love, you know, the idea. I'm reading this, and I'm, and all right, go from there. But I just, I like, from the first page, I'm like, all right, I'm in it. I'm like Mike Romo. I'm in it.
Okay, I got thoughts on this.
Go.
So the premise, title of the book is Kill or Be Killed. So, Sad Sack character at the beginning feels bad about himself, tries to kill himself. It doesn't happen. He like hits a blanket on a clothesline, tried to jump off a building, lives.
Which was very funny, by the way.
He goes back to his room. Demon shows up and says, "Well, I saved you. Now you owe me a life. Every month, you got to kill somebody. Give them to me so that you can stay alive." And that's it. That's kill or be killed. That's it. And so he turns into a person who kills people. Which is what the cold open sort of basically tells us.
Yeah.
It feels like a Mark Miller book. Is what it feels like.
It's yeah,
like,
it really does.
Not a current Mark Miller book. Like a Mark Miller book from like 5 years ago.
Yeah. Now that said, this book had a shit ton going for it.
Yes.
Right? Like the opening sequence is we see the guy and he's donned this red ski mask and he's got a shotgun and he's going to do his kill. And at first I was like, oh, so this is a Punisher character. Right, like, because he's talking about how there are bad people in the world and all the, this kind of, there's a morality play going on here, and I'm like, okay, this is a, and we go through this whole sequence of, he was with his girlfriend and guys made fun of him and he didn't stand up for himself and his girlfriend got mad, these sort of things, and he's just a sad sack guy who, can't catch a break, and then we get introduced to his roommate and his former best friend who's now dating his roommate, and you're like, all right, there's a little love triangle here going. Right, and then you find out that the girl starts kissing him on the side, and I felt his hopes rise as well. Like I was in the emotional arc, and then we find out that she just feels sorry for him, and that's what leads to, honestly, which I think is an amazing sequence by Sean Phillips. Of there's the first page where 2/3 vertically of the page are him standing on the ledge, and then there's just a white kind of Terry Moore like panel of just text. And then he tries to kill himself, and he jumps, and he hits the wire, and then hits the clothesline, and hits the blanket, and lands, right? And I'm thinking, all right, he's going to have this epiphany, and he's going to be this man, he's going to stand up for himself, and then the demon comes. Now, that said, Phillips draws the demon very well.
Okay, we can break this down into two things. First of all, at first I thought, oh, it's an Ed Brubaker book.
Yeah.
I thought, oh, he's going to do this again, and I was like, that's fine by me.
Yeah.
On the one hand, I almost have to give him credit. He's not a go-to-the-demon type of guy.
He's not, yeah.
Although I didn't read Fatale, which was like...
That was more, I want to say, H.R. Puffin stuff, but no.
I almost said Giger, but it's not Giger. Lovecraft.
Lovecraft. H.P. Lovecraft, right, yeah. That was Lovecraftian.
I don't know, it is a subculture to which I am almost entirely blind.
Yep, or ignorant.
Ignorant, yeah. But I actually have those around. I'm going to read them at some point. Yeah. Because then the second point is, all hail Sean Phillips.
Yes. Holy shit.
And I think that he is one of those pros. He's been around a long time. Yeah. And I have liked almost everything he's ever done, from Hellblazer in through what was the one? The first thing he did with Brubaker from Wildstorm, the spy that I can't remember the name of. I'm going to move along until we think of it. But he's just a guy like...
Sleeper.
There you go. As good a storyteller.
Oh, but this was some next level shit. Like the pages towards the end of the book in the snow. There's one page where he's walking out of the subway at Astor Place in New York City with the girl. Where I was like, holy shit! Like, this is beautiful.
Yeah. Also, if you compare this to the last series that they just did together, the Hollywood one.
Yeah.
It's a different. I mean, it's the same guy, but it is a different style.
Yep.
It doesn't have this. It doesn't have that sort of almost rough, brushy look that he had used previously.
I gotta tell you, it was really hard not to pick this as pick of the week, and I just couldn't. I just had to take a stand on the demon.
Yeah, I mean, for me, that really is that is a turning point in so many books, is when they're starting to tell a story and then the supernatural element kicks in.
Yep.
And I know that to some people that is the heart of comics, but to me, unless it's really, really good, and it can be, it can be a cop-out, and I'm undecided on this. I don't right. think it's a cop-out. I think he's just trying to make him – I think Brubaker's trying to do it the different thing than he's always doing, so this is how he's doing that.
Right.
I bet this sells as a movie quicker than any of them because of it, too.
Yeah, yeah.
That was exactly. a demon. Shit, sign us up.
Yeah. But yeah, so it's –
good.
I mean, it was just beautiful. I mean, I thought it was beautiful. I thought it was great. It just, if this book had been this sad sack guy, he feels sorry, tries to kill himself, fails, and then decides to carpe diem, and this is how he deals with that. Like, I was way more interested in that than having the spooky demon beating him up. I was like, oh, well, the demon got his hands dirty. I like that.
The demon was interesting. The demon was unique. And if it had been, if you take away the demon, then you go, oh, it's that's wanted.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean it's a, which is why I said that before. That is, you know, we've seen this. So you take the demon out of it, and it's a complete cliche.
Yep.
And it worked. Like it's a neat conceit, and also you're not entirely sure if the demon is real.
Yep.
Which is nice. Like there's an element of doubt to that.
Yep.
So is he going crazy?
Yep.
And there might be like if you look at it like that, that he's had a psychotic break.
Yeah.
Game on.
Yeah, so we'll see. I'm definitely gonna stick with it, but this was great. It just I couldn't have it. I can't have it.
Don't not read a Brubaker Phillips series unless it's Fatale, which I did not read.
Right, I read Fatale anyway. All right, so moving on. Moon Knight number 5.
Now this book. I'm sure you have something to say about it. All I have to say about it is that I don't read this book. I just look at it.
Yeah.
I literally stopped reading it because I don't care.
Yeah.
But it's the Smallwood art. Is a delight and a joy. And then you add something else in this one.
Yeah, right. Well this was the let's get a jam, let's get a bunch of artists to draw different scenes, and that can be either there's a risk or a reward, you know, and we had Greg Smallwood, the regular artist. We also had Wilfredo Torres, our favorite Francesco Francavilla, and the elusive James Stokoe. From an artistic standpoint, this issue was beautiful. It was a tour de force. It was fantastic. And yeah, like you, like I'm reading it, but I'm not reading it closely. And I know just enough of the Mark Spector, Stephen Grant, Moon Knight, all the kind of stuff to get the importance of the how it ended with he's back in the Stephen Grant persona and he's an actor and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I didn't catch that.
Yeah. But it just looked beautiful. It was great. So
yeah, I mean, really, it's Declan Shalvey had been the one to sort of help relaunch this book with Warren Ellis.
Yeah.
And that looked so good. And when they switched teams, I was like, eh. But man, Greg Smallwood is a talent.
Yeah, this was a real strong contender from an art standpoint.
I was actually reading books with my wife was next to me doing something and I was reading, it was Aquaman, I think, and there was a panel in Aquaman, we're not gonna talk about it, but there was a couple of panels where I was like, look at this. This guy's not quite ready.
Yeah.
And I was trying to sort of explain why. And then the next book I read was Moon Knight, and I showed her different things. I was like, this guy's ready.
Yeah.
Like that was just as a really good example of you know, somebody's really got it on the page.
Yep. So
Mateo Scalero's ready.
Oh, he's ready for sure. Jeez.
He's so ready. He's got to fucking stop it.
Oh, God. I was so happy to see Black Science back with the new arc and with Black Science number 23, which came out this week. And not only Mateo Scalero has got to stop it because he's just stupid good. But I just love Remender's ability to be like, all right, game on. Here we go. You know, like.
But also, like, you know what? Let's do a fucking Disney and the Witch in the Woods story.
Exactly. Yeah.
and this book was really pushing the bounds of this is a little ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, he's on a horse. He's talking to it. There's an accident. You know, him and the horse. It was Disney.
Yep.
It was great.
It was great. So yeah, I mean, I don't know what more to say other than that. So it's a brand new story arc. You could have read the past 22 issues, but I think that you could just pick this up and go with it, and like, you know, and we see our hero Grant McKay back in the Black Science, you know, kind of costume, and he's trying to get something to prove himself in the eyes of his daughter, and his daughter is a princess now, and it's wacky, and it's and the Witch in the Woods wants from Grant the knowledge of Black Science. So I like it. It was great.
They got the font in that one. Yeah, you know, yeah. And there was a color change on this one to Moreno Denizio.
Yeah.
I wasn't so into it because I think it was Lee Lowridge before.
Yeah.
I've warmed to it. I'm good now. Or he's
no, maybe, it was Dean Wyatt originally.
Oh, right.
It was Dean,
right.
Yeah.
But either way, I feel like the colors have come around a little bit, and maybe they've been evened out a little, or maybe I'm used to it. But
no, I think I agree. I think it's all clicking on this series.
Yep.
So now's a great time. Jump into Black Science. If you like this issue, go back. I'm pretty sure they put out a big hardcover of all the previous ones. Go buy that, and it's one of the best comic books on the stands. So Eisner Award-winning writer Jason Aaron is back with Doctor Strange number 10, which wraps up the what is the story arc? The End of Magic, the Last Days of Magic,
the
Last Days of Magic,
the End of Magic.
So
I liked this. This is like the first long Doctor Strange story I've ever actually read.
Yeah,
it was very. It felt very similar, I guess, in theme to that Thor story, the God Killer, the God Butcher.
Yeah.
But it was fun. I like this character as written.
Yeah.
This sort of hero who is way more put upon than he seems.
I did like the conclusion where like, okay, well, we won, so why is magic gone?
Yeah.
You know, and Strange saying, you know, I just went through a bunch of spells and they did nothing, and like this idea of like, well, okay, what is the one thing that Doctor Strange is known for? Magic. What happens when you take that away? I think that's very compelling.
Yeah,
So it's interesting, and I would like to thank everybody in the world who did not make me roll up my sleeves and get angry and when Jason Aaron won the Eisner for Best Writer. It was well deserved, and we want to congratulate him on behalf of my fanboy for that. So
absolutely, I really dug. There's a little bit at the end where all the like they make it so that everybody can see everything that's happening. Because one of the conceits is that normal people don't see what's going on with magic.
Yeah.
And all the it's literally done in like a panel, but it's a bunch of people standing on the street talking about how he helped them.
Yeah.
And it gives the whole thing a really neighborhood feel. Like everybody kind of knows about this guy, but they don't talk about it.
Yeah.
But like he's made all of this impact on the people around him and being helpful in little ways that no one talks about. I thought that was nice.
Yeah, nice little touch. So.
Good stuff.
All right.
Get that guy an Eisner.
He deserves another Eisner. So there you go.
At least.
Yeah. Well, another Eisner winner was artist Cliff Chang of Paper Girls.
Guy can't draw a bike, but other than that, he's awesome.
Oh, is that your nitpick here?
No. Actually, the last issue, like there was a horrendously drawn bicycle. Like it was the stem was bad. I was like, he's never seen a bike.
Oh.
But they were better in this one, so I think somebody actually like he improved. So I was like, all right, your bikes are correct in this one.
I love Cliff Chang's work. This whole series has been amazing.
Yeah. So. No. Yes. I think. I wasn't into this series for a little while.
I remember, yeah.
I fell behind, and then the last couple when they came to now, because, I mean, Stranger Things is kind of a big thing right now because it's.
I haven't watched it.
I'm not. But it's either good or it's nostalgic, and I don't know if people know which.
Right.
Which is so fucking dismissive about what people like, but that's how I feel about it, and it's that, like, if you took it out of the fact that it's in the 80s. Would that make it worse or better or whatever?
Right.
And this book shot around that by taking the 80 kids and putting them now, which I thought was a little more interesting. And Vaughn did one of those really great cliffhangers at the end of this book.
Yep.
Which he's famous. He's the best last guy page.
Yeah.
Last page guy.
He's
the best last page guy in the industry.
Yep. I agree.
By a million miles. And every time he does it, you're like, yes.
Yep. Agreed.
Do your thing, dog.
Yep.
And so I thought it was a really good ending, and I'm really, it is so, it's the Back to the Future that gets, it's so much fun to watch a character be with either a younger, older version of themselves or their parents or whatever. And
yeah, I mean, what's great is that it's playing on that idea without feeling like a retread of Back to the Future or of other things like that. Like it is wholly a new approach to that kind of story. So yeah, I think it's great. Every issue just kind of makes me, you know, even a little more happier because it's playing with nostalgia and the idea of the 80s and all stuff like that enough, but not relying on it, you know.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Which I think is key.
Anyway, I mean, like I'm all in. Like now I'm at the, like for a little while I was like, I don't know if I like this. And that was at the end of that first arc where there was just the weird guys who spoke a strange language and everything was strange.
Yeah.
And now, like, we know who the characters are really good. There's a really great little group of characters who all have their own thing going on, and they're very distinctive. And I really look forward to getting the issues now. Yeah. And you could always tell because they're gorgeous. The cover designs are great.
Just the whole the whole package is amazing. Yeah. So, yeah. Great stuff. So Paper Girls number 8. Awesome. All right. I want to take a quick break and tell you how you can help support iFanboy and thank everybody who's supporting us currently. We launched on Patreon, 2-3 weeks ago? And we're actually overwhelmed by the amount of support we've gotten already. We have 195 patrons who have signed up to help support iFanboy, and we want to thank everybody for that. And in fact, your support has unlocked not only one, not only two, but three of our goals in 2 weeks, which is crazy.
Honestly, we didn't expect that. So. Yeah,
exactly. So currently right now, if you want to become a patron, you can go to iFanboy.com/support. There's a link over there to click over to Patreon or just go to Patreon.com/iFanboy. For as little as $3 a month, you can pledge. And now you can help us pick a book. Later on in the show, we're going to talk about the patron's pick of a comic. We're going to be bringing some more Talks Flows. We're going to talk about that later on in the show. And now the goal that we hit just a couple of days ago, we're going to be doing a monthly Google Hangout Q&A chat. So we're going to figure out when we're going to do that. So stay tuned if you're a current patron for when we're going to do that. And that'll be a fun time for all. So go to ifanboy.com/support. There's you can find a link to click over to Patreon and become a patron. If that's not your thing, you can shop on Amazon, and that helps us as well. A little cut of your purchases goes into our pocket from Amazon, not from you. So all you gotta do is go and buy your video games and your comics and your books and your TVs, whatever you might buy from Amazon.
Diapers,
exactly. And we get a little cut of the purchase, and we thank everybody who does that. And finally, of course, if you don't want to do anything like that, you just want to give us some cold hard cash. There's a donate button there where you can donate through PayPal of any denomination you like. We thank everybody who's done that. It's all at ifanboy.com/support. We thank everybody for your support of supporting iFanboy on a weekly basis. We love you.
It's awesome. It's such a good feeling to have it sort of shoot up like that in a way that I don't think that we expected.
Oh, absolutely. I thought we would flounder in and around $300 to $400. And I was like, okay. Yeah. You know, like, so it's honestly been amazing to see the reaction of the folks, you know, about the patron pick and stuff like that. And we're going to talk about that during the patron pick because there are some questions from some of the patrons that I want to address. But but yeah, it's just so cool. And so
it's one of those like, oh, you really like us.
Yeah, thank you.
It's a Sally Field moment. Yeah, again, I am all about 40-year-old references.
There you go.
So. My thing. Nightwing number 2.
Yes.
Connor's not here, so I have to revisit this.
All right.
There was a scene on a bridge, sort of. For those of you at home. There was a little sad romantic bit at the end there that I know that Connor would have. I can see him yelling in a slightly high pitched voice.
Yeah, I can see.
Oh,
that. Yeah.
You know what? Tim Seeley's doing a thing here, and I feel like that whole spiral Dick Grayson as Secret Agent thing was probably really good, but it wasn't really grabbing me. I know it was good because when I read it, I was like, "This is pretty good," but this feels like Dick Grayson.
Yep.
I really like that character. Not as much as Connor, because Connor really likes that character, but it's been really good, and I just wanted to touch base. Like I'm sticking with it, and right now I'm totally feeling like I need to drop some of these comic books.
Right, right.
Because there's two a week, or there's two a month coming out of
them.
Well,
that's the thing that drives me crazy. So like we did Nightwing Rebirth, remember? And I was like, oh, I love it. This is great. And then I went out. I was out I went on a trip and stuff like that. So I missed a week. And I mean, did Nightwing ship weekly at this point? It shipped every because I missed Nightwing number 1, so I had to go back and read that. And I was like, these things are coming out way too fast.
I think Rebirth came out, and then the next week number 1 came out. We skip a week, and then number 2 comes out. No, because we talked about the bridge last week.
Yeah.
Jesus.
So. Anyway, but I think it was weekly. I think it is too much. But anyway, so Nightwing is great. It's fantastic.
Yeah, it was good.
So I thought on a whim, I haven't been reading Invincible Iron Man, but with all the Civil War stuff going on, and it had the Civil War banner on it, so I'm like, let me go look at it. Maybe it'll have something to do with Civil War 2, unlike Deadpool, which has the banner and still has nothing to do with Civil War, but whatever. And so I'm flipping through, and so it's Bendis doing Tony Stark, and okay, yeah. And it's Diodato, who I haven't seen in a while. And I thought it was interesting because Diodato is an artist that I feel as if has a very strong cartooning kind of style, but over the years has incorporated some photo reference, you know, more obviously. And I thought this is interesting in juxtaposition with what we've seen recently with Alex Maleev in the other Iron Man book, where Maleev has relied less on photo referencing and more on his cartooning style, which I like. And then I got about halfway through the book when apparently Ned Beatty makes an appearance.
Hold on. Going back. Yes, he does. Yes, he does.
And so Tony Stark is on a campus and he's looking for this Riri Williams girl who's made the Iron Man armor or whatever. And he's talking to the dean of the school. And I zoom in on the panel and I was like, that's just fucking Ned Beatty. Like, there's no attempt to hide it or anything. And so then I'm like, why is Mike Deodato drawing Ned Beatty in a comic book?
Let me ask you, who is Tony Stark? Because he looks like Christian Bale to me, which he's Batman.
Yeah.
So that's weird.
That's weird. But the thing is, I can't really tell who. Maybe it's Bale. I don't know. But, like, well, this is straight up Ned Beatty.
Yeah, no, it is.
Okay.
It is.
All right. That's all. That's all I wanted to comment on.
Wheel boy.
Oh, I want Otis Burke.
Well, it works either way.
Yeah.
Here's the problem with this. It's not a problem. I don't think he's breaking any rules artistically.
Yeah.
But when I watch a movie, right, and a guy shows up and I'm like, oh, who's that guy? And then you have to, like, compulsively look up who that person is and what you know them from.
Yeah.
I don't want to do that in a comic book.
Yeah.
Or if you're watching the DreamWorks animated film and you're like, oh, who's that voice? That's that person. And, like, I don't like the idea of, like, that takes me out of it if I'm seeing faces I recognize on characters that aren't that. Like, it's I guess there's an argument for it. I don't enjoy that, though.
Right.
That's problematic. Because I did spend the whole time going, who is it that we got? Who's this Tony Stark?
Yeah. It takes you out of it.
That's exactly what I'm getting at. Otherwise, the story's fine. You just said it's Bendis doing Tony Stark.
Yeah.
You know, it's Robert Downey Jr.'s voice. It's right. Fine.
And Ned Beatty. Okay, cool. Yeah. So, hey, listen, I don't want to come across wrong. I'm in support of Ned Beatty in my comics. I just didn't expect it. So there.
Sure.
No.
I'm gonna skip right here to The Walking Dead 157.
Okay.
And what we've had here is this is a spoiler, and I still feel uncomfortable doing it. But we had like a major turn for the character Negan,
yep.
Who I think I have finally come around on.
Okay.
In that before I was like, oh, you just like writing this guy a lot.
Right.
And and now I'm like, all right, you know what? I'm in. I kind of like him. I like that you're doing this too. But basically, they've just like he was out and he went and he killed one of their enemies. And now they're going to sort of team up with him, which is classic comic book stuff, really, if you think about it. But it's a good this is the first issue of the Whisper War. It's been really enjoyable. And it's just fun to watch. I'm taking the TV show and all of that other stuff out of it. It's really fun to see Kirkman's sort of dream for what he wanted to do with this keep going apparently forever.
Right.
Like, this comic book's going to go on forever.
Absolutely.
And yeah. now more than ever.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to be reading this when I'm 60.
I believe it.
It's really, like, I know it. I want to, and very quickly, in Superman 4, I've been enjoying this story. I don't like this Eradicator thing so much because I don't know I don't know Eradicator, but it seems like it's kind of, I don't know, not great. Maybe I just don't like what he looks like. But what was great in this was that a big part of it takes place in a bar with I can't remember the character's name, but he's one of those old-timey Superman supporting characters, and he's talking to Haken, who is one of the supporting characters from Hitman. And they're like in a bar talking about how great Superman is. And then whenever one of them says Superman, it's spelled with S-O-O-P-E-R-M-A-N, Superman. Like, it's just got that like old. Oh, it's Bibbo. It's not the super chimp. But like, they're just hanging out in this bar, smoking and drinking and talking about how great Superman is. And I enjoyed that little bit of it. But if you read Hitman, you're like, oh, Haken, those characters are getting pulled in, which is really fun.
Cool. All right. So now it is the time for the patrons pick. So as we mentioned earlier, every week, the patrons who have chipped in from a $3 or higher. Oh, no, wait, what is it? Oh, yeah. Pretty much every patron gets to do it, right? Yeah. Every patron gets to do it. Gets to vote on a comic that they want us to discuss on the show. We put up the voting on Monday on Patreon it's a patrons only page that they can see the link to. And we had a whole bunch of patrons. Not everyone, surprisingly, though. We've got nearly 200 patrons, and less than half have voted in the patron pick.
So it's new.
You got to look for it. But so this week's pick was Animosity number one. Written by Marguerite Bennett with art by Rafael De La Torre. And this is a book from Aftershock Comics, a little upstart new publisher. This book was horrifying.
In what sense?
This is my worst nightmare.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You'd be the first against the wall.
Yeah.
Basically, here's the premise. All the animals become aware, and they can speak, and most of them are pretty angry at the humans.
Yeah.
And so this is what happens when the world falls apart, except the dogs seem to like us, mostly.
Yeah, mostly.
Which is nice. I don't know what it is about me, but I keep new things at like an arm's distance.
Yep.
And so my instinct on this when I started was like I'm not sure there was literal eye rolling, but there was a small like, yeah, okay, great. What are you doing here? And I get to this bit where there are 3 2-page spreads in a row.
Yep.
Which are 6 panels piece, 12 panels, and you watch the change happen in all of these different 12 different scenarios basically. Of animals, and I was like, that was really actually pretty cool.
It was good. Like, it was funny because when I started reading it, I felt as if the concept felt like a pitch that
super high concept,
like a high concept pitch that I would when I was at Image, like people were blind submission, like, oh, can you do my comic? And it's like this, the animals, you know, like it felt like a upstart pitch kind of book. Marguerite Bennett has been around. She's written a bunch of stuff. She's definitely an up-and-comer. Yeah, no, she's definitely an up-and-comer in terms of comics, and the stuff she's been doing is really good. I thought Rafael De La Torre's art was pretty good. At first blush, I kind of did the same thing, kind of dismissed it in that regard. But by the end of the issue, aside from me being horrified because I'm afraid of animals and this is my nightmare, I was like, that was really good. That was really, really good. So it was high concept done well. I agree with you that the changeover panels were that sequence was really well done. So
yeah, and like there was a certain sweetness in the way that the dog likes the little girl, which is like you needed that. It's almost because otherwise it would be far too horrifying.
Right, that's what you expect from a dog too, from a lawyer.
Yeah, that's what you want. So it makes us feel good about ourselves, even though everything else is sort of supposed to make you feel bad. And then maybe I was worried about that it was just going to be like, look how bad we are to animals. And I was like, I know,
So very cool. Thank you, patrons, for picking that. I want to respond to some of the comments that some folks made on Patreon on the post. Where they were saying that they would love to see the patrons would like to see the list of other books patrons are picking, or see like the top 3 or 5, or see like a viewable poll. We're working on it. It's hard because a lot of comics come out every week, and so we're trying to figure out the best mechanism to do that. So I just wanted to let you all know that you've been heard and that we're figuring it out. So stay tuned. So there you go. And finally. In a segment of the show I like to call the I Got This Corner. Every week we bestow the award to the comic that is using the term I Got This. And it's not a good award to get. But and that's why, unfortunately, it's with heavy heart that we give this week's I Got This Award to Batman #4 from Tom King and David Finch that had not one but 2 I Got This's. So, but it also had... a little shout out to us, so maybe we can forgive him. So I don't know.
Which makes me think
that was done on purpose.
He's fucking with us.
If it's done on purpose, then I will fucking give him a high five next time I see him, because like that is well done.
Using the platform of Batman. I mean, I don't know that I want to think about that quick, because what better compliment could there ever be?
Yep. And it was funny because so
he knows. Yeah. I know he knows.
Well, yeah, but the thing is, I was wondering because there are a couple of things I was wondering, because one is that we really started harping on the I Got This recently, and comics are done in advance. So I was wondering if this issue was done before we had made it into what we've made it into right now. So that there's a chance of that. So if I'm Tom King, I totally pick up the thread, Josh, that you just dropped and say, oh, yeah, that was doing it on purpose.
Oh, yeah.
But I think there's more than a better chance that script was written way before we started calling it out.
He was just part of this is just the tail wave of that.
Yeah, exactly.
That wave.
Now, the funny thing is that I read the issue and I completely did not notice our names in it.
I didn't.
And then people on Twitter were like, hey, great to see you in Batman. And I was like, oh, was that an issue I missed? Did I miss an issue? And so, like, I went back and, like, read. And then I went to this week's issue. I was like, oh, there it is. There's my name. So that's always fun. So thank you for that, Tom and David.
That hadn't happened in a while. I was starting to feel irrelevant.
It's very cool. Very cool. So, all right. So those are the books that we enjoyed this week. Go to ifanboy.com where you can comment on this post and talk about the comics you enjoyed or what your thoughts on these comics were. We got some time for some audience questions. We got a bunch of them that are short and sweet. Should be fun to do. So, Josh, why don't you lead us off with a heavy-handed one?
Yeah. Matthew from North Carolina. Oh, God, don't screw this up. Matthew from North Carolina says, due to the recent political climate, I've recently discovered that some of my friends are surprisingly racist. This is especially weird for me because I'm black, which is weird for Josh to read out loud. Do you have any – because I'm very pale. Do you have any comic suggestions for my bigoted friends to help them learn about tolerance? Says Matthew from Oh My God, I Have to Leave North Carolina.
Yeah. Well, there's an obvious answer to this, right?
Wow. Okay.
The recent March three-volume series of Representative John Lewis and Nate Powell, a great artist, telling the story of John Lewis's involvement in the civil rights movement in the 60s. Right?
Yeah. It's funny because what I was tending to think of is like stories by people who are kind of aware of it and kind of getting it right, but are using allegory, really.
Yeah.
To sort of, it was the first thing that came up for me in my mind, for whatever reason, was the Young Avengers.
Interesting.
And the reason that that came up is because it's a picture of sort of a group of diverse people living in harmony with one another. You take it from the Allen Heinberg stuff, and Allen Heinberg's a gay writer, so, you know, he's dealing with persecution in his own way. In his stories, but like it was just a group of characters. They're men and women, lots of different races in there and sexual orientations, and they all, you know, respect each other and get along, but also acknowledge who they are in there. That it matters. It's not like Patriot is a black character, and the fact that he's black doesn't register. So he's just black because they colored him that way. And Kate Bishop is, you know, a rich white girl, and you know, Hulkling and Wiccan are two gay characters who are in a relationship, and also Young Kang, who is uncategorizable. I don't, but
he's Kang.
He is Kang. Yeah. I literally thought of that as like, this is my view of what it should be like.
Yeah.
Dogs and cats living together.
That's interesting. All right, so that's more of a comic that shows a world where that doesn't exist. But if you want to take racism kind of head on, I was going to say, in addition to March, the same artist, Nate Powell, did a book called The Silence of Our Friends, which was written by Mark Long and Jim DeMonakis, our good friend who started the Emerald City Comic Con. And it's a semi-autobiographical story that takes place in Texas in the late 60s about two families – a white family and a black family, and it's really kind of addressing the racism that existed in the late 60s in Texas, and was really well done in that way. So,
see, I think Stuck Rubber Baby by Howard, hold on, I can look this up, is another one that was re-released by Vertigo not too many years ago. Howard, yeah. Cruz. Actually, if you look it up, I wrote a book of the month on it, and it's about, again, it's a gay man. They seem to be very good at writing comic books about this kind of thing. But he grew up in the South in the 60s. And so it's about all those things in this sort of climate that he grew up in, and, you know, how you become a liberal and how you sort of deal with those. I feel like a lot of those lessons are things that, well, at least I learned in school. And now we're dealing with a different political climate. Yep. And it's where a bunch of people are like, it's not me. And then a lot of people of color are saying, no, you know, there's other stuff that you still don't understand. And I'm trying to think of a good comic book for that, which is, I guess, where Young Avengers came from, is that, like, this is how you should be.
Yeah, which is good, which is a nice thing. And I would definitely say don't read any of the comics in the late 70s, early 80s, where you had moments like in the Justice League when they're considering Black Lightning to join the team, and they're, and Wonder Woman and Flash and Green Lantern are watching him fight in the streets, and someone's like, well, he looks Justice League worthy, and the Flash goes, are you serious? Look at him.
Oh, God. But you know what? Like, that's actually
that was horrible.
Helpful.
Yeah, no, yeah, exactly.
I would put it this way. If you've got friends who are sort of unaware of their, and that let's
casual racism. Casual racism, yeah.
There's get them out of here, and then there's just saying dumb shit you don't know what you're saying, and then being unable to admit it.
Yeah.
Okay? So a comic like that, you can say, I want you to look at this. this is what people used to do and think that it was okay.
Right.
And then you can use that example. This is what people do now and they think it's okay and it's not. You know, like there's stuff like that that's happening all the time. And I keep looking at how books are done in their tokenism and in their trying to, you know, sort of do something good and they're not really. I don't know that there's a comic book that teaches that is what I guess I'm getting at.
Right.
Yeah. And I've been thinking about it.
Yeah.
But on the other side, what's really nice about especially Marvel Comics, and I'm not as familiar with DC in this aspect, but like you get to watch like this birth of cultural progressivism go through Marvel Comics. And even though you have those moments, it's always moving in the right direction. Back to, you know, the fact that like Jack Kirby was like, we need to have a Negro superhero, his words. And he created Black Panther for that, which is rad, but he also called him Black Panther.
Yeah.
There's that, but at least that's part of a discussion, and I think that discussion is super interesting and super relevant even to today.
Yeah,
like this was a guy trying to do good and trying to be a good guy, but like he's a Jewish kid from the Lower East Side in the 40s. So
well, yeah, like a victim of the time, you know. Where
yeah, but being able to recognize that stuff and talk about it, I think is a huge part of that conversation.
Agreed.
So yeah.
All right. Well, hopefully we helped you there, Matthew.
I can't. We did.
Yeah. So our next question comes from Lucas from Neulingbach, Austria, who says Lex Luthor got killed by Gorilla Grodd. Neil Gaiman's Death of Sandman fame came and resurrected him. And all of this led Ron to say in Pick of the Week number 254, wow, Bob Harris has been in the job for a week and they got a Vertigo crossover already. What's next, Swamp Thing? By the way, astonishing prediction, Ron, regarding the end of Brightest Day. Thank you. So this brings to my question. What were the most unexpected and or entertaining crossovers you read in the last couple of years? And the reason why I wanted to answer this question is because it's not an entertaining crossover in the last couple of years, but I was recently reminded of one of my favorite crossovers ever as I was going through my comic collection before I got rid of it. Do you remember in the late 90s, Josh, that Marvel actually did a crossover with Star Trek, with the X-Men?
Oh.
Yes. There was a X-Men Star Trek crossover where different crews of Star Trek crossed over with different X-Men of different eras. So it was like the 60s X-Men with the 60s Star Trek, and it was glorious. So.
That's pretty specific. That's late 90s, you said?
Yeah, that was late 90s, yeah.
Okay, I get it.
Yeah.
So. Both Marvel and Star Trek are like, please, anyone? Look, we'll do it together.
Yeah, exactly. All right?
I very specifically remember, I can't, like when you say crossover, I tend to think of like the events,
Civil War, or whatever.
Yeah, that's what I think.
But not like the Batman Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles one that just happened, or
yeah. I feel like those don't happen as much. But I very specifically remember being a kid and looking through the, I think it was American Comics. There was two mail order places.
Yeah. The one with the eagle.
Yeah. And I used to order from them.
Yeah.
Because I'd see like something in their listing, I'm like, that sounds cool. And it's exactly what comics are supposed to feel like. That's exactly what we've been chasing forever, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, exactly.
And there was a X-Men versus Fantastic Four.
Yes.
Four-issue miniseries. And, like, I mail-ordered all of them. And not at once, because I couldn't afford them. And I had them. I had them for years. And, like, I have a little box, like a short box that I keep the comics I really care about in. Those are in there.
Nice.
Because that was the first time that I was like, well, that looks interesting. And my, like, 11-year-old mind, who really didn't know, you know, very much. And I was like, that's exactly what they've been chasing after all this time. And I remember, like, feel like it was a big Franklin Richards kind of thing, and
always is.
And he was involved with Doom and the X-Men, and that was great.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? Did you read that?
I totally did. And I remember the original X-Men versus Avengers back in the 80s, and I mean that's what Secret Wars was. Secret Wars was just this one big crazy kind of crossover, and the thing was like I remember I think probably one of my one of the high points was the Batman Spawn one that Frank Miller and Todd McFarlane worked on together.
Yeah, but that's not for the right reason.
No, that was totally for the right reason. That was a blast. That was just like completely. Yeah, it was a sales grab, but like that was so much fun to read. And McFarlane worked it into the continuity of Spawn, which was cool. You know, I don't know. Those crossovers are weird because like the thing is that like on a certain level, there's no way for them to matter because they're just like the ridiculous like X-Men and Star Trek. You know what I mean? Like they're just like, oh, this funny thing happened once. You know, like. Or there were what if or whatever, you know.
This wasn't in the last few years, but I remember every time a superhero showed up in Hitman,
yeah,
I loved it.
Yeah.
Like whenever Superman would have a conversation with Hitman.
Yeah.
That's well, you like just the like best. Hitman, so, yeah. No, no, it's because you got to throw what is Superman up against what is, you know, the other side of it supposed to be. And sort of it would bounce it against reality a little more. You had to watch the characters deal with it, and I liked that. And I liked that, like, Superman recognized there was heroism in Tommy Monahan, that kind of thing. By the way, the X-Men versus Fantastic Four versus the X-Men, 1987, written by Chris Claremont, shockingly, penciled by John Bogdanov.
Oh, wow!
By Terry Austin.
Wow, that's an 80s lineup if I ever saw it.
Oh man, yeah, but it was written in just that. Chris Claremont was the right guy at the right time, man.
Yep, that's for sure.
And you know, he did a thing where, like, we felt like we were reading, when we were young, we felt like we were reading something really sophisticated, yeah, but we could still read it. Yep. And that was fun stuff.
Good stuff. All right, one more.
I'll have a good recent one. Yeah.
All right, one more.
Last one. This is Ken from the Great White North. As the sun never totally sets during the summer months, I can't tell how long I've been thinking about this question. 3 days, 3 months, not sure. That was great, by the way, Ken. There have been several Iditarods since I started. Anyway, when you think of a certain character, like, say, Superman, Batman, or the Joker, what artist rendition is the first to pop in your individual noggins for each? Should we do this like one of those therapeutic first response things?
Yes.
Like, I say something, and you just say what comes to mind, okay?
Okay. All right, let's go.
Batman.
Neil Adams.
Superman.
Kurt Swan.
Cyclops.
Not John Byrne, but the other guy, Paul Smith. Jim Lee.
You can't change it.
I can't. I mean, but let's be honest. Yeah, it's I want to say Paul Smith, but it's probably really Jim Lee.
Spider-Man.
McFarlane. Yeah.
Here, do a couple for me, so I don't.
Okay. Thor.
Well, Simonson.
All right. Good. Let's go. Fantastic Four.
Byrne,
really? Not Jack?
That's what popped in. Listen, I can't. That's what popped in.
Yeah,
first one you see, I think.
Yeah.
First one you're aware.
Harley Quinn.
Paul Dini.
Thank you. No, you idiot.
No, he didn't draw it, but.
Right. Bruce. Oh. Bruce Timm.
Not Bruce Timm, though. The guy who's passed away.
Michael Turner?
Oh, Mike. Oh, Connor would know this. It starts up with a P. It's a longer name. He used to do Batman Adventures, I think. Or we'll say something. I forget. But like that animated style either way.
Right. Yeah. I want to think
did
of a
Bruce
good one.
Saw that like Mad
yes,
Love.
Yeah. The first one was Paul Dini and Bruce Timm. They drew Mad Love. That was it. Yeah. Constantine. Yeah.
Dylan.
All right. There you go.
Do Batman.
Batman.
Jim Aparo.
Nice. You thought about that.
No, I'd had it. It popped in immediately, and I wanted to get it out.
All right. What about for you, Spider-Man?
Ramita Sr., oddly enough, is the first thing I saw.
Nah, classic.
I don't see the name. I see the art. Like, I see the picture of him, and then I figure out who that artist is.
Yeah. Black Bolt.
I thought of Jay Lee, oddly enough.
Yeah, no, I'm
but
sure
again, like for me, it's where when I first became familiar with that character.
It's
so
the
imprint.
It's the imprint. Yeah.
So. Daredevil.
Oh, Frank Miller. Huh. Yeah, that's the imprint. Is that 80s that original Frank Miller? Yeah.
Romita Jr.
Yeah. Oh wow. There you go. I can see it. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a fun game.
That's a really fun game. We should do that again sometime.
Yeah, we should get Connor in on it. So.
Yeah.
All right, so if you've got any questions, be sure to email us at contact@ifanboy.com. And don't forget to tell us who you are, where you're from, how long you thought about the question, and try to keep it brief. We appreciate it.
Green Lantern.
Oh, man. I who drew it during Ron Mars's run?
Daryl Banks,
yeah. I think that's
how do I know that, but I can't remember the name of that last Brubaker series that ended like a week ago.
The fade out. So.
Yeah, there you go. I can't take in new information, but everything that was there is still there.
Yeah, it's crazy. All right, cool. So thanks for the emails. Be sure to email us, contact@ifanboy.com. All right, so upcoming and past podcasts and things like that, you might have heard Star Trek Beyond. Me and Connor and Mike Romo got real geeky on Star Trek. So go back in the feed and you can listen to that where we talk about the movie. And then, as Josh mentioned earlier, myself and Mike Romo will be discussing Suicide Squad. That's probably going to be coming out after this show, so keep an eye out for it. And it should be interesting. So there you go.
Well, as promised to the patrons, yes. We're going to be doing a Talksplode. I've got a recording set up for this week.
All right.
With a couple of creators who are a team.
It's coming.
Yep. So that's going to come up. And, of course, we have to do them monthly now.
Yep. That's
I'm sorry. We will be doing them monthly now. I will not make that into an imperative. And also make sure to go check out Goodfellas Minute at goodfellasminute.com, where myself, Ron, and Connor went through the movie Goodfellas one episode, 1 minute at a time. So 146 episodes of stunning talk about the highway system of New York City.
Did you know,
and the environs?
Did you know that that I guess Pete the retailer put together a website of all the Minute podcasts?
No.
Yeah, I forget what the URL is. But yeah, he basically, it's like if you're looking for, you know, in addition to Goodfellas Minute and Star Wars Minute, the other Minute podcasts, they're all in one spot. And it's like minutepodcast.com or something like that. I'm trying to find it.
I was fooled by the Force Awakens Minute.
Why?
It's not a real podcast. They did one episode. It was like a joke.
Yeah, I know.
I thought it was a whole series. I was like, I can't believe they do this to them.
Yep.
And they were like, no, that's not
a thing. It's a joke. Moviesbyminutes.com. There it is. So the minute format is alive and strong, and there's right there the top Star Wars Minute, Goodfellas Minute, and then Indiana Jones, Back to the Future, Jaws, Alien, etc.
Did you finish Jaws?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Just saying.
All right. So check that all out.
Head over to.
He's on minute 72. And last episode was May 31st.
Thing about a podcast is he's got black eyes, his lifeless eyes, his doll's eyes. It seems to be living. He'll bite you and then eyes roll over white. By the way, if you are driving 3 hours in a car with your wife and kids and you do that a lot, they don't appreciate it. Head to iFanboy.com to comment on this show. You want to talk about this week's books, talk about anything we talked about, solve racism. You can find all of our other podcasts there also. Past interviews, Talksplodes. We've talked to Remender a billion times. You can follow us at facebook.com/iFanboy or at iFanboy on Twitter. And you can follow us individually at J.A. Flanagan, at C.S. Kilpatrick, and at RonXO, where we are actively working on the race issue.
Yes, doing our best. And if you enjoy the show, please tell others. Go to your comic book store, tell your friends on your message boards, wherever you might be, social media. Let everyone know, hey, I dig iFanboy. And more importantly, write a review on iTunes. We appreciate everybody who's written a review. Please keep them coming. That's awesome. But yes, we love the people who've been tweeting saying that they're supporting us on Patreon. Please keep it up. That's amazing. You guys are awesome.
Huge.
Yeah, it's great. So thanks for listening. That's going to wrap it up for this week. I believe next week. Well, I don't know. We'll see about it. Connor's back next week, I think. No, is he?
I don't know.
Okay, I don't know. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. We'll figure that out. All right, so until then, I'm Ron.
I'm Josh. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.